Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
We're talking preseason schedule for like a minute on this episode of Locked On Pelicans. I'm Brett Dawson.
If you ask me honestly, I think four preseason games would be plenty.
Yeah.
And then that way, if you did play four preseason games, you would be forced to play all your good players. So when you play in, you know, Jacksonville or someplace like that, the people that come, the fans that come, will be able to see the players that they come to see play.
That was Alvin Gentry last year talking about the NBA preseason, and that is why you never delete old audio. I'm Brett Dawson. I cover the Pelicans for the New Orleans Advocate, and this is Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And we are going to talk a little bit of preseason schedule today, but not a whole lot. Jim Eichenhofer from Pelicans.com is going to join us very shortly. We're going to talk some about his job, about the perks and quirks of covering a team for its own website. Bunch of talk about a bunch of topics with Jim coming up. But I do need to touch briefly on the preseason schedule that the Pelicans released, because that is sort of the news of the day. Before we get into that, I do want to tell you, we talked last week about the fact that I was moving out of my apartment, and I did do that, and my stuff is sitting in storage right now, and I am house-sitting, which is a great gig that I have, and I'm in a great place, but there's one little drawback. It's great for living and not so great for podcasting in the sense that I have these really high ceilings and these hardwood floors. And that sounds like a humble brag, but it's not my house, so I promise you it's not. It makes it a little tough. I think I'm getting a little bit of an echo. Hopefully it won't be too bad for you, and hopefully it won't be too bad when I talk to Jim, because that interview was also recorded via Skype here in the house. So still little kinks to work out with that thing, and I'll just be here for a few weeks while I look for a place. Speaking of which, if you have a free apartment in Uptown or Mid-City on a safe street, you just like to give me, that would be great. You can email me at lockedonpelicans@gmail.com. That's not really what the podcast is about, finding me a home. It would be a nice side deal, but not the purpose. The purpose, of course, is to talk about the Pelicans, and we will address that preseason schedule a little bit. It's the news of the day, but most of that news was kind of old news. The one thing, I guess we know now, the Pelicans will play one home game. That'll be October 4th against the Pacers. That's the only game at the Smoothie King Center among the six preseason games, and that's kind of why I played that Alvin Gentry clip talking about the possibility of four games somewhere down the road. He doesn't really like too long a preseason schedule. NBA teams are allowed to play eight. The Pelicans are playing six. They've played seven the last couple of years. It's been 3 years ago, I think, was the last time they played eight. So reducing that schedule a little bit, I don't know how much of that is because it's Alvin Gentry's preference and how much is because, as of course we know, they're going to play two games October 9th and 12th in China, one in Shanghai, one in Beijing. We've known that for a long time. That was on that preseason schedule that was released today, Thursday. But we've already known that. We already knew about the Bossier City game, which opens the preseason. That's against the Mavericks on October 1st. Then just two other games, October 18th and 20th at the Hawks, at the Magic, both away from home. So not a lot of home action. The Pelicans will play their first two regular season games at home, which we talked about last week against Denver and Golden State. And that's really sort of the news of the preseason schedule. That's it. It was a very short release. There's a short story on it at theadvocate.com if you want to check that out. But primarily what we're going to do today, the main purpose of the podcast, is to have Jim Eichenhofer on. I told you we would focus some on guests in the offseason while we're on this once weekly schedule. And last week with the NBA schedule coming out, that was tough to do. But this week had some time to really have a long chat with Jim. We covered a lot of different topics. And we're going to get into those right after I make a couple of announcements. You know, we're still right in the middle of the NBA's slowest month. And yet, there's stuff happening all the time. I mentioned the preseason schedule, but just this week, Drew Holiday was on a teleconference talking about the Pelicans who are getting together in Los Angeles to work out together, talking a little bit about his return from that cracked orbital bone, updating us on Anthony Davis and where he stands as he gets back on the court. All that stuff was at theadvocate.com. And that's where you need to go for all your Pelicans news. Coverage from me, from Scott Kushner, from Rod Walker. It's all going to be there. And while things are a little slow right now, that is not the case with football. Both LSU and the Saints are coming up on the start of the season. It'll be here before you know it. The Advocate has you covered on both those things. And if you're into the Advocate's coverage of the Saints, and why wouldn't you be? It's the best that you can find. You also want to take a listen to Locked On Saints with Nick Underhill, with Adam West, with Joel Erickson. A great, great podcast. Really fun. You get a lot of insight, a lot of information, a lot of opinion on the Saints. You definitely want to check that out. You want to subscribe, rate it, and review it. It's part of this Locked On Podcast Network. You want to do those same things for this podcast. Make sure that you've subscribed to Locked On Pelicans. You make sure that you get every episode, especially now that we're on the weekly schedule. It'll alternate what day it comes out, usually Wednesday, Thursday. Sometimes it might be Friday. Sometimes it might be a little earlier in the week. The way you can guarantee you get it, go to iTunes and subscribe. Leave a 5-star review if that's something you're inclined to do. Leave a rating and leave a review as well. Leave a couple of sentences. Tell people why you like the podcast. Would greatly appreciate it. That just raises our numbers just a little bit, gets us a little bit more listenership, and that's something that we're definitely trying to do. That said, the podcast is growing. Our average episode number just keeps climbing. Really appreciate all of you for listening. If you're interested in sponsoring this podcast, if you have a business and you'd like to reach some sports fans, particularly male sports fans between 18 and 44, that's the audience here. And if you're looking for them, shoot me an email at lockedonpelicans@gmail.com and we can talk about sponsorships. I've told you that in a perfect world, we would focus a lot on interviews in these off-season episodes when we're only going once a week. And one of the people that I really wanted to get on was the guy who's on this week, Jim Eichenhofer. Jim's a basketball junkie. He, as I said, covers the Pelicans for Pelicans.com. Really an NBA guy, keeps up with the league. Just has an interesting job, I think, in the sense of covering the team for its in-house website. And also is just a really interesting guy and a good guy to talk to. So good guest to have on. And I want to get to the part where we talk to him because that's the fun part of this podcast. So let's jump into that. So Jim Eichenhofer is here. Jim, how are you?
I'm great, Brett. How are you?
I'm doing really well. You know, I had to ask you, Jim Eichenhofer, how to pronounce your name before I did it on the podcast, even though I have known you for a year. That's really embarrassing.
That's okay. I'm a little disappointed, but I think I'll get over it. No, it's not an easy name. I know when people see it on paper, they really sometimes get confused. But, yeah, it's Eichenhofer.
So. I've always said Eichenhofer. I almost feel like I said Eichenhofer when I came in here. But I was like, I was so focused that I think I got it wrong. But it's spelled like Eichenhofer. So it's a little bit – it throws people off a little bit. I can understand that.
Yeah, it has something to do with the German pronunciation. My grandfather was actually born in Germany. So I'm super German on my dad's side. So – but, yeah, it's I think in the German it's always Hof, not Hof. I think that's why it's pronounced that way.
That's my University of Education showing. I took 4 semesters of German. I really should be able to do that better. I would be getting scolded right now in German by my German professor. She would not be happy. So Jim, as I told people at the beginning, you are the Pelican. You're effectively the Pelicans beat writer for the website for Pelicans.com. So it's an in-house position. So, you know, like, just so people know, you won't be like trashing the team, I don't think, while we're here, right?
It depends. I might go off the deep end a couple times. We'll see. Okay. No, I probably won't say anyone should get fired or anyone should get traded, partly because I think, you know, even you or some of the other writers have to see these people and deal with these people all the time. So, yeah, they might need to know that going in. I'm not going to suggest any firings or trades.
The other good news about that is it's August 17th as we record this, so really nobody needs to get fired on August 17th. I think we're good.
That's a good point. Yes, I agree with that.
So you're here on a huge day. This is really great timing because the preseason schedule came out, and what a news event. I don't know what time the NBA TV special is for the preseason schedule, but the Pelicans put it out, and I would say that you've got to be at least a little bit happy with the preseason schedule because you, unlike anybody else on the beat, you go everywhere pretty much. You go to every game.
Yeah.
And I assume that means China, right? We'll get into China in a minute. Are you going to China? Okay, we'll talk.
Yes. We'll talk. Yeah, I will be going to China.
But what has to make you somewhat happy about this preseason schedule is six games. You could play eight. You're playing six. That's, I mean, for people that got to go everywhere, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I've discussed this before in different conversations that I would love to see the NBA get down to four preseason games. So if there was two games in China this year and then only two other games, I think we'd be totally happy with that. I mean, we do so much. There's so much travel during the season that being completely honest, when the preseason schedule comes out, like you said, you don't look forward to like, okay, we have to go maybe 5-7 different places, including along with maybe one home preseason game. So yeah, I'm definitely cool with a reduced preseason schedule. You play 82 games. I really don't think anyone is really pining for preseason action, to be brutally honest.
Well, I was actually looking at it when I wrote my story, just like the story for theadvocate.com. Go to theadvocate.com. Looking back at Alvin Gentry's comments last fall, which is basically echoed what you said that really you need four games to get your team ready, and that's the number he'd like to eventually see everybody go to is four. And having not been on the road last year, but having watched preseason games and watched some of the rotations and watched the way that, you know, rotation players play and how much they play and how much your star players play over the course of the preseason, I think you could get everything done in four.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what really ends up happening when you play eight games is there's a couple games that are kind of just throwaways and just kind of like the way it is in the NFL, where that last game is you don't see any of the main guys. You see that, I think that happens just for a longer period of NBA preseason where you don't need your rotation players to play eight preseason games. You probably don't even need more than like two or three. So, yeah, I think the fact that the schedule in the past has been so extensive and probably needlessly big with eight games, you have a lot of unintended byproducts of that, which doesn't make the – I mean, not that anyone's is super – excited about preseason games anyways, but it kind of waters it down even more to where you're not seeing like the main guys play just because there's so many preseason games. You don't need to get everybody on the floor game in, game out.
And the other thing with this team in particular, and you know, look, you never say never because you never know exactly what's going to happen. And especially if somebody starts the season inactive or whatever, as Alvin Gentry said, Tyreke Evans probably will. But for the most part, they're going in with 15 guys who you figure are going to make the team. There's not a whole lot of looking around. There are going to be some non-guaranteed invites, but it's not like you're going to – there aren't a bunch of guys who you're going to learn a bunch about on this roster.
Sure. I mean, I would agree with that. I think the one thing that I think about sometimes, though, when people say, you know, what's the point of bringing in other guys is – I mean, I know I said earlier that I'm not going to demand any trades or anything, but it is possible that you could always make a trade where you say you get rid of two guys and you bring one guy back in a deal, and that opens up a roster spot. So just because, you know, they have 15 guys right now that you project to be on the roster doesn't necessarily mean that on October 24th or whatever the day is where you have to get your roster down to 15, that'll still be the case. So I'm sure some of the guys that come to teams that already, because it's not like the Pelicans are the only team in the NBA that has the situation where you're looking at, you know, these 15 guys are probably going to be on the squad. But there's other teams in the NBA too where guys go to camp there and they, of course, want to try to make that team. But also, you know, it's possible that they could play well and catch on somebody somewhere else. But I also do think that it's not always wise to rule out the possibility that there could be, you know, changes down the road or injuries and stuff like that that kind of change the way things look from the way they are right now.
Yeah, there's no doubt. The trade thing is really – I talked about this one of these days recently. That is a real thing. It's out there that – yeah, I mean, you don't expect a whole lot to happen right now. You don't expect a whole lot to happen in the preseason. But it can. You can always make trades. And as you say, you could have one guy coming back. You could have a draft pick coming back. You could have any number of things could happen that impact your roster. And you're right in that the –
the other three guys, the three guys that they're going to bring in, are going to have a chance to play some because, you know, you're not going to play, as we talked about, your rotation guys are not going to play a ton of minutes. And so there's a great value. There's value for both sides. The Pelicans should take a look at other guys because you want to see what other guys look like and see, you know, does that make some piece that you have more tradable because you found a guy who could fill some role. And then it makes a ton of sense for those guys because they are getting a chance to showcase themselves for other teams. A lot of teams, Ish Smith went through the whole preseason with somebody else last year, but with the Pelicans for opening night.
Right. You know, I haven't seen this. I don't think I've seen this happen here, but I've heard of other cases where the end of preseason, whether it's the agent or the player themselves, is kind of dissatisfied with, like, looking at the situation and saying, like, hey, you know, the agent saying, like, my guy's not going to play very much here. He might be the 14th or 15th man on the roster. I want to be sent somewhere else. And I've heard of that happening in other places in the NBA, too, where, like you kind of alluded to, you might trade a guy just for, like, a future draft pick. So, I mean, there's definitely a few other scenarios that can happen that kind of change the way things look. And, I mean, last season was a great example, too, of, like, I think from week to week we needed to keep updating the roster because of all of the injuries and all of the different changes that kept happening.
Yeah, we ran a list at the end of the year of everybody who had played, and it was weird that it wasn't even the most in the league because Memphis had more guys. Although part of that was because you know, a lot of the guys the Pelicans brought in just happened to work out. That was one thing. They didn't have kind of a rotating door of those, a revolving door of those 10-day guys. Those guys tended to stick more than the guys in Memphis did. But it was still crazy just to have gone from, you know, the team you expected at the beginning to that team that was playing at the end was, I mean, it tells you that you never stop scouting for that reason.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I want to say, I'm trying to remember back, I want to say part of Memphis's part of the reason they had more was because they did some trades where some different guys got switched around, whereas the Pelicans really didn't do too much as far as that goes with other teams. So it was definitely a season from that standpoint that you want to forget about as quickly as possible.
So let's talk about the important part of preseason, which is that you're going to China, and I guess, you know, when that gets decided, and that's been decided for a while, that wasn't something when the schedule came out today. Obviously, you guys have known, everybody's known for a while that you're going to China in two games against the Rockets. Do you see that and get excited? Do you think, oh, gosh, I got to go all the way to China? Like, what's your reaction when you hear about that for the first time?
For me, I was excited because I've never been there before. I'm not sure if there's other people in the organization that will be on this trip that have done it before. But for me, I was excited because it's going to be a new experience. At the same time, I would have been okay with a normal preseason as well, partly because of what I mentioned earlier about how we do so much traveling during the season that it kind of adds on to what you have to do. But the cool thing is that, as we talked about, there's only six preseason games, so it's not going to be that taxing beyond the China trip. And also, I think when they come back from the China trip, they're still like – maybe like two full weeks before the regular season gets started when it starts to get really hectic. So I think there's always some time built in where you can kind of get back to normal and get back used to adjusted to the time zone and, you know, being back in the U.S. and so on and so forth. Plus the first two games are home, so that helps a little bit as well. But I was excited about it because I think it'll be a cool opportunity. I actually have just started in the last couple of days talking to some of my friends that work for other teams that have done that trip to kind of figure out all that goes into it from our standpoint of what we can do and what we're allowed to do over in China.
Yeah. I was going to say, are there restrictions? Are there things? I mean, it's not like you're going to, Oakland. It's a whole other world.
I don't know a lot about this, so I don't want to speculate too much, but I know that, like, for example, they have their own version of Twitter, so we can't really use Twitter over there. There's a few different things that I think we're just from a functionality standpoint, we're unable to do simply from the fact that we're in another country. And I'm not sure exactly how it affects email and so on and so forth, and obviously phone calls and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm just kind of in the fact-finding mode right now of trying to figure out, like, exactly how it affects us from people that have done it before with other NBA teams.
I wish I could go. It's not going to be in the Advocate budget, I don't believe, for me to go to China. But I would be excited about it. I think it would be a cool thing to get to do just because, you know, it is going to be – I think it'll be interesting to watch just how people react to it. You got two guys in obviously AD and James Harden, who are big stars, and they're kind of worldwide stars. And I think it'll be fun to just sort of see how people – Harden in particular, as I understand it, is quite popular in China. The Rockets aren't their popular team. They have been, you know, since the Yao Ming days. It just has continued to be the case. So I think that'll be a cool experience for you. I imagine these are going to be kind of road games based on what I know about China.
Yeah. I mean, the Rockets are definitely the most popular team there, as far as I know, from just talking to different people over the years. I remember we had Carl Landry on the team a few years ago. Such super nice guy, played for the Rockets before he was here in New Orleans, and he had like a sneaker deal over there. And I mean, there's a lot. He's a good player, but he's not like, you know, what we consider to be a star. And I think at one point there was something like 10 or 12 Rockets players a few years ago that all had sneaker deals in China. So, and another story that I always got a kick out of when you're talking about like the way people react to NBA players, we had, I don't know if you remember Hilton Armstrong. He played his first couple of years in the NBA in New Orleans. There was a story when they played in preseason in, I think it was in Berlin. It was either in Berlin or Barcelona. I wasn't there. And, a couple fans came up to him and were so excited and had his jersey and said, like, you know, Hilton, you're our favorite player. And, you know, no disrespect to Hilton Armstrong, but people got a kick out of it because it was just kind of showed like how into the NBA people are that the eighth or ninth man on a New Orleans then Hornets team would even have, like, you know, fans that had been waiting for him to come over, even though he'd only been in the NBA for like a year or two at that time.
Right. Unlikely that he was going to have that in New Orleans very often, you know, like, probably not going to happen a ton. It's for people who don't know, it's really interesting. Like, I went to the All-Star game I did everything for the first time this year, really on an NBA beat, but I went to the All-Star game for the first time. And, you know, there are a ton of reporters from China there. And they'll ask some questions, you know, on video, and they'll record some stuff. But almost every one of them, and I'm sure you've seen this somewhere along the way, just ends the interview with asking the player, just, could you say hello to your fans in China? It's a huge thing, and they ask you to look into their camera and do it. And, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times. Anthony Davis is not super comfortable with it yet, and it was funny. That was one of the things I noticed at the All-Star game. He didn't know what to say. They said, just say anything. And at one point, I think he literally said the word anything, because he just had no idea how to react to this. And then a guy like Carmelo Anthony, who's been in the league a long time and is kind of has sort of a global perspective from a business standpoint because he's done it for so long.
Yeah.
That guy has a prepared message. He knows what to say every time. He tells him to stay mellow, and he, you know, throws up a peace sign. And it's just funny because it is a huge part of the culture that I think, you know, I only have a secondhand sense of it. So I think it's cool that you'll get to see that sort of firsthand.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in the job that we're in the position that I've been in, I have a ton of respect for people that love the NBA. I mean, I know you and I have had tons of conversations about the NBA, and that's one thing that, you know, I think one of the reasons that I liked having you right off the bat is, you know, this is not a huge football area. No, that's not a news flash. But
not a huge basketball area, you mean? Yes. Yeah.
Basketball. It is a huge football. That was a pretty big misspoke there.
It's all right.
it's a huge football area. So, I mean, I think it's cool to see people, you know, in other countries or just anybody that's so huge into the NBA as much as I am, just because you know, and I know obviously that's a big reason why China is such a big future of the NBA in terms of the fan base, is that there's obviously, it's a massive country, but their love of basketball and the NBA is immense.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you guys are doing this. It's not like somebody in the league office and sat down with you guys and said, hey, you know, what would be a cool country to go to? You know, I mean, it's you're going to China because China is a big part of the future of the league and really the present of the league. It's just such a giant market and the league is so popular.
Right. Exactly. No doubt. They've been doing it for a while too, so it's definitely something. I want to say, even going back maybe 15 or more years, they've had even maybe a regular season game over there. I can't remember, but they've definitely been doing preseason games there for quite some time.
Yeah, it's a long time that this specifically the China thing. There's been the world stuff all over. There have been games everywhere, but China has been a big part of it for quite a while. It's a big thing. London, obviously, during the season is a big thing. It's cool. I love that part of the NBA. I love the fact that it is so global because, as you say, like, we live in a place where it's easy to lose sight of how big the sport is sometimes because it's so overwhelmed, you know. literally and figuratively, you walk out and the shadow of the football building is right there when you walk outside. You know, it's a huge thing. And there's I know people got mad because Scott Kushner and I like bagged on how much people are breathlessly updating us on Saints preseason practices and stuff. I don't dislike the Saints. I'm a basketball guy. You know, it's my thing. I like it.
Right. Sure.
So
yeah.
I want to ask you a little bit about, we'll talk some about the team and some things like that, but I wanted to, just for people who don't know, how do you end up in the position that you're in? Because it's a, you know, as I said, I think, barring something unforeseen, like Justin Verrier from ESPN travels some, I travel some, the Times-Picayune will travel a little bit, but nobody goes everywhere. You're in a position where you go pretty much everywhere. You go, yep. You know, you are where they are. You know, you're if they're having a shoot around on the road, you're there. You know, if they're staying overnight someplace, you're where they are. If they're staying somewhere in between, if they got a day off between games, you're on the road with them on that day off. How do you get to that job? Where you know, when you did you set out to work for a team website, or how did it just kind of happen?
No, it really just kind of happened. I actually started at a newspaper. I worked for two different newspapers in the Syracuse and Rochester area, which is where I'm from, where I was born and raised. When I was working for my hometown newspaper, like a year out of college, I started doing like magazine freelance writing for basketball. And so, to make a long story short, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Slam magazine. I actually wrote them a letter just saying like, hey, I'm looking for freelance work. Do you guys have anything available? They, to my amazement, they sent me back a letter maybe a couple weeks later saying that they were. I started doing freelance stuff for them on like very not well-known college players and then guys in the NBA that were like on the level of role players. You know what I mean? I didn't do like the big features. They had me doing some of the maybe rising star type players. Then I started getting Raptors articles because I was driving distance somewhat to Toronto of where I'm from. So while I was working for a newspaper full time, I was doing freelance magazine writing for, and it was only basketball because that's what I loved. My brother actually played Division II college in Rochester, New York, a school probably not too many people have heard of called Roberts Wesleyan. So I had a huge basketball background. I loved the freelance stuff that I did for magazines, but I wanted it to be full time. I didn't. For the newspaper, I covered like high school Division III mostly. We also covered Syracuse University basketball and football, but for the most part, it was kind of lower profile and a lot of sports that I'm really not into, to be completely honest. So I started applying for different jobs in the NBA, and I kind of made the decision that the first really good job that I offered that I got, or the first good decent job offer, I would take it regardless of where it was. And it just so happened that it was with the then Hornets. So there's a lot more to the story than that and details, but in a nutshell, that's kind of how I ended up in this job. I never set out to really, like, I started in newspapers and I thought that was probably where I was going to stay. But then this job I applied for and got it. And a big reason I got it was because I had basketball magazine writing that I could send to them, like, hey, here's all the clips of different NBA players that I've profiled and interviewed and stuff like that. So I think that was the big reason why they hired me, was that I had specific basketball and even NBA writing experience.
So I'm from, everybody knows on the podcast because I talk about myself too much, I'm from Kentucky. I have been to upstate New York. I've been a couple of times. I've been to Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And obviously I have been to New Orleans and now lived here. That's a bit of a culture shift, right? Moving from upstate New York to New Orleans?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, but I've said this many times. You've probably even heard me say this. I actually prefer the South very much to where I'm from. I like New York. I miss my family and stuff like that. Like, pretty much all my relatives live in the Northeast, whether it's New York or Pennsylvania. But I love the weather in the South. I love warm weather. I know that's not really your thing. You're more of a cooler weather kind of guy. But it's a big difference. But like I said, I kind of knew that I was going to take a first job in the NBA. And I remember my parents said to me, like, hey, are you sure you want to do this? You sure you want to just completely, like, overturn your life and change everything? And I was like, yeah, I definitely do, because my number one thing is I want to work in the NBA. I want to do something that I love every single day and not have it just be like 10% of what I do. I wanted it to be, you know, 100% of what I do every day. So that's really the way it turned out for me. And it worked out great. I mean, I knew the area that I'm from is not, you probably know this too, the area I'm from is very big on college basketball because of Syracuse and all the success that they've had and so on and so forth, but not really an NBA area. So I kind of knew that I would have to leave that area to do something in the NBA. And I think it's worked out so well for me that I can't be any happier really with the way everything turned out and the just how blessed I am to be able to get to do what I get to do.
Yeah, when you live in a place like that, believe me, I know. a college basketball place, you know.
You mean Lexington or Kentucky?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up just outside of Louisville. And so, like, you had Kentucky and Louisville and even Indiana, because Indiana was on, like, every, you know, most of their home games.
Yeah.
Most of their games were televised, even back in the day before there was, like, a Big Ten network. They were on TV locally. We could see them. And so you're swimming upstream because people really do think it's, like, people in areas like that think it's better basketball, college basketball.
Oh, for
sure. They're crazy. They don't know what they're talking about, but they do think that. And so, like, it's almost weird to emerge as, like, a big NBA fan from a place like that. But I think for me, you know, I got an appreciation for basketball really early because I lived in a place where basketball was such a big thing and everybody was so into it. And then I just sort of realized, they do it better up there. Like, that's better. I like that better. I like that stuff.
I could go on it's funny you mentioned that. I could go on a long rant about or just a discussion of, like, growing up where I did, all of the things that people would say about the NBA that I knew were just flat out completely wrong, or think people would list reasons why they love college basketball and didn't like the NBA. So yeah, I definitely met that a lot. And it's funny, I do feel like as time has gone on though, that some of the things, this is a whole other discussion, but some of the things that people said about college basketball, or maybe even more specifically the NCAA when I was a kid, have kind of eroded as far as, like, people saying that, like, oh, you know, they're just playing for fun and it's money isn't really involved in college sports, stuff like that especially. So it's kind of funny. I think things have changed a lot. If I was growing up there now, I'd have a lot more ammunition than I did maybe when I was a little kid.
Yeah, I think that's true. There's a little bit less of that. Like, they're only playing for the name on the front of the jersey. Like, there's a little less of that when you've got guys. Like, I mean, you know, I went to college at Kentucky. Everybody goes for a year and then moves on to the NBA. It's not like,
right.
You know, I mean, they enjoy their time and all, but don't get me wrong. It's, you know, it's an NBA sort of farm system. It's funny, though, like, for people who don't know, it's like the conversation this year, as my first year in the league, and you've been doing this a long time, and, you know, Justin moved in. Justin went to UConn as a big UConn fan. You're a Syracuse fan. There's some tension.
Right.
I was like, the tension between you and Justin on every level, but I especially love the UConn Syracuse. But what's funny is you sit around in an NBA workroom, and I had this experience even when I traveled. And one of the things people in an NBA workroom do is sit around and talk about how much they've not watched college basketball all year. Something will come up and they'll be like, oh yeah, I haven't even seen that guy. Or, oh, like, I tuned in because I wanted to watch Buddy Hield, but I haven't watched a game in so long. That happens all the time. I think I watched like a handful of games last year, and mostly I watched Ben Simmons because LSU was right around the corner. And I watched a couple of Oklahoma games. I watched Oklahoma play Kansas once or twice. I just happened to catch Buddy Hield. And I saw like maybe three Kentucky games. You just don't have time to watch much of it. And if you do, I tend to just watch the other NBA stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. I feel like as time has gone on, sadly, I try to watch Syracuse as much as I can because that's my team. But as time goes on, I feel like I watch less and less. I mean, the more you're removed from the area, and you might find this to be the case as well for you, the longer you're gone, the more you kind of have a hard time keeping up with it. You're not talking to as many people who are like, hey, they should start this guy at small forward and they should do this and that. And also simply, a lot of times the games are the same time as Pelicans games. So it's like, you know, you find as you look at the schedule that there a lot of times there aren't really that many opportunities to actually watch because you're busy doing something else.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's on at the same time. And then the other thing is, like, a lot of times if I get home after a day of, like, if there's practice and I've done stuff all day and then I just have an opportunity to watch a game, I have league pass and I tend to want to, you know, I want to watch the Warriors game or I want to watch the Cavs or whatever. You know, it just tends to be
definitely
the way my brain sort of is. And also that's work. You know, you're going to see these teams. It does you more good to watch the Rockets, who you're going to see a few times and know a little bit more about them than it does to watch some, like, you know, random SEC game. No offense, SEC.
Yeah.
SEC,
you know, like, yeah. You know, it's funny, a couple of guys I worked with at the newspaper in my hometown, they always used to kind of make fun of me because I was so obsessed with the NBA, and I would always watch games. I worked at night, so a lot of times I'd have to DVR them, or I'd miss the entire season pretty much when you work at night like that. So it's funny that I always try to say to people, too, and I don't know whether they believe me at first or not, but I love the NBA. Like, if I didn't have this job or I wasn't working in the NBA, I'd still be watching it constantly because that's exactly what I did before. I had no tie to the NBA other than like the freelance magazine stuff that I did sporadically.
Yeah, I've always said if I ever went back to covering colleges, I would really prefer to cover it in a place like, you know, Washington, D.C. or Minneapolis, like someplace where you could cover a big college program, but there would be an NBA team in town, too. So you'd have an NBA game, you know, NBA games you could go to regularly. I would still just want to watch it. Even when I was covering Kentucky, when I was home at night, when I was back after a game or if they weren't playing or whatever, I was watching NBA games. So I just enjoyed doing it. It's like the thing I like doing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the NBA schedule, too, is so – I think one thing – this is a partly a whole other conversation, but I think one thing that people forget when they compare college and the NBA is the schedule makes such a huge difference in terms of everything. I mean, there's plenty of weeks during the season where the Pelicans have four or five games. College only plays basically two games a week. So it's just an entirely different thing. And you can focus a lot more in college on one game, which I think – has a lot of effects as far as even like the players and the coaches and the media. You know that probably better than anybody as far as covering it. But in the NBA, it's kind of a move on thing. You know, you play a game and then you have another game the next night or within 2 days almost every time. So it's just a totally different thing. But I completely agree with you that for me too, I think as time has gone on, I've gotten more into the NCAA tournament but less into the regular season. And I'm sure there's reasons for that too, as far as like what people emphasize compared to back in the day. I think even like the conference tournaments were big, I remember, but now it doesn't seem like the conference tournaments are really something that people get that excited about on average.
Yeah. It's a 3 week sport. It's a great 3 weeks. It's an awesome 3 weeks. And then you don't you don't really have to pay that much attention the rest of the year. I wanted to ask you too, I think this is interesting and I've never really talked to you that much about this off the air. So here we go. I'll just put you on the spot. And if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. But I've always thought in your job, it is an interesting line that you walk all the time because as I said, you go everywhere they go, but you don't just go everywhere they go. You go with them. So you're on a plane that they're on. You are in a hotel that they're in, and yet you're also sort of operating in our world. When it's time for the game, you go to the press room. It's not like you're hanging out in the locker room and getting the pregame speech, you know, like you're in our area. And so you do kind of move back and forth between a couple of worlds. And I always wonder if that line is awkward or weird or if it was when you first started doing it after coming from newspapers or whatever.
Not really. I mean, to me, like, it wasn't that hard to transition into it. And I feel like with a lot of things, like when you talk about objectivity or stuff like that, like I try to leave it to, how do I explain this? I try to leave it to like the fans to decide that. And I try to leave it to you guys to decide that as far as like, I'm never going to, like in the media room, I'm not going to be like, oh, the Pelicans got screwed. The refs did this. You know what I mean? Like, right. I always want to try to be reasonable. And even though I am employed by the team, I still want to follow a lot of the same principles that I was taught when I was working in newspapers, which is how I started my career and really like the foundation for everything. So I don't really find it to be that awkward or that hard of a transition. I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of things that are beneficial to me, which you kind of outlined as far as like just being able to go to every game and the support that I'm given. Again, like all things that I never foresaw. And I never was like, when I was working in newspapers, I was never like, oh, I need to work for a team website so I can get this X, Y, and Z. But it's just all things that kind of happened and kind of fell into place and that kind of thing. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but
no, I just think the whole thing is sort of interesting because, like, so for example, you know, I this is not breaking news. I covered Anthony Davis in college. This is like a thing that everybody knows. And that was nice for me when I got here because there was a face, you know, there was a guy who also happened to be the franchise player, who at least knew who I was and had a past relationship with me. And I think early on that helped a little bit. It helped me kind of get comfortable in the locker room a little. I think it was just it was advantageous. It's not like he was calling me and giving me all these things, but I got a couple sit downs with him. That kind of stuff helps. And I think the more you build those relationships, the more helpful that is to really cover a team well and present maybe some things to people that they wouldn't otherwise get. I think for you, for example, just watching last year, there are some guys, and one of them is Ryan Anderson, who's gone. But that's a guy who obviously you benefited from being around all the time, because that was a guy who loved to kind of joke with you and kind of, you know, he made a lot of fun jokes at your expense. Never like actually, never like mean. He was like, he joked at your expense a lot. But that, I think that relationship has to come in part from just the sheer volume of time you spend around those guys.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I used to, in this same job, I used to not travel. And it's funny the difference in, like, the way people, the players maybe perceive you as far as, like, how all in you are in terms of if they see you every day compared to, like, okay, well, it's not something that even I think can, it's not conscious with them. But, like, when they only see you for the home games, I think there's just a big difference in terms of like how well they know you. Obviously, if they're getting twice as much exposure to seeing you day in and day out as when, you know, you just did the home games. But I mean, I think it's kind of the same. Like, I know my job is obviously a lot different or somewhat different than your job and some of the other guys that you mentioned. But I mean, I think there's a certain commonality as far as like the way that you treat people, the way that you treat the players, the respect that you have for them, or the respect that you treat them with, or, you know, not doing things that are, you know, shady or unethical. I think, you know, in your case, I'm sure, and it seemed like within a quick amount of time, the players definitely respect you and, you know, treat you, they pretty much are going to treat you as well as you treat them. So, you know, it's just one of those things where I think a lot of it is kind of common sense. And I think a big part of this job as far as like sports writing is dealing with people. I mean, I'm sure you've seen people too who have been super talented, but maybe aren't the greatest around people and maybe sometimes do stuff that rubs people the wrong way. And I feel like sometimes that can be a bigger negative than if you are incompetent and don't know how to write, is if you just aren't good as far as relationships and, you know, building trust with people and just letting people realize that, you know, that you're not out to you know, cause problems for them. Or if with the case with Ryan, I think he knew that I wasn't going to get upset. He knew that like I had that kind of laid back personality that he could joke with me and it was fine and I was going to be totally happy with it. And also that I got a lot of his humor, which I think was key, because sometimes he would joke around about stuff and I think people who didn't know him very well would be like, wait a minute, is he starting a problem here or whatever? Right. But with me, you know, I had been around him long enough to know like exactly what he's like. And he was always a good, as I'm sure you saw, just a good person to be around, and I'm sure he'll be joking with us this year as well, just from another team.
Oh, sure. He was, you know, when the Orlando guys would come in, you know, he would hold court when there weren't a ton of traveling people with the Magic, but there were two or three, and he knew those guys, and it was like, you know, reunion week when they would come to town.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can tell, I'm not sure if you saw this, this is just a random example I thought of. Anthony Morrow did a Players Tribune article a few weeks ago or maybe a couple months ago now, where he was talking about how it's important to treat even like team employees as valuable. And you can tell when you see a guy go to a different team or you're in a different city where he's played before, the way people act, you can tell like this guy is somebody that treated people with respect and was, you know, somebody that everybody likes. And you can definitely tell a big difference between that and somebody who maybe didn't go out of their way to treat everybody well or treat even like the lower level employees like me in a good way.
You are a vital part of the organization. I will not say anything less than that. You know, there are also, I don't want to call them disadvantages to your job because like but there are quirks to your job that are a little bit different. And one of the things I noticed like this year in the free agency period, you are bound by essentially team rules. You can't talk about a free agent until that free agent is signed. And that's fine because it keeps you from really having to worry about whether something happened at midnight or whatever. I don't think you probably mind that. But it's weird sometimes because people will ask you a question about Twitter and you'll say, I'm happy to answer that in like a week. You know, like I can't really help you there right now.
I think that's one of the things that people who have the same job as me or people who kind of work in the same realm have been wondering about, especially as time goes on, it gets more and more absurd in with how quick the news cycle is that we have to wait until, you know, like a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, even sometimes to talk about free agency signings. It just doesn't seem – it seems so out of place in today's kind of media climate. But, I mean, the NBA has reasons why they do that, of why there's a moratorium and why – like on the surface, I'm sure a lot of people who hear this think, like, what harm would it do for me on July 2nd or July 3rd to be like, hey, I think Etuan Moore is a good player, or I think Langston Galloway was this or that. But I think the NBA, one of the reasons that they have that rule in place is because they know that teams would abuse it. They know that teams would come up with different ways to kind of, I don't know if tamper is the right word, but they kind of have put things in place to make sure that there's nothing crazy that happens to hopefully avoid, like, for example, the DeAndre Jordan thing was a whole other story. But yeah, you're right, though, that it's a very strange thing that we go through at the beginning of July every year where everyone in the world is talking about – everyone in the basketball world is talking about the different moves, and we can't even say on Twitter a single word about any of the guys that have reached agreements but haven't officially signed yet.
All right, so this lets us veer into free agency, and these are choppy waters here. This, we're going to start talking about the team a little bit. That's the last thing we'll do. But I don't need you to evaluate the free agency period, but what I'm interested in is what kind of interests you. We're just starting to get we're on what I would call the outskirts of the preseason now. You know, we talked to Drew Holiday on a conference call this week. That was yesterday. You were on that. Those guys are working out. Training camp is not that far away. We're not that far from things like Alvin Gentry doing speaking engagements and all that kind of stuff. We're getting really close. We're in the preseason kind of. So as we get closer to that actual preseason, what interests you the most about this team? What are you kind of looking at as we close in?
I think one of the biggest things is going to be chemistry. Unfortunately, I don't know how much we can really gauge that until the games get started. But there's no objective way to measure, like, okay, how well does this team get along? How well are they bonding? And in terms of on the court, you can't do that until they actually start playing games. Like, I'm not even sure if preseason you can do that. But I think that's probably the biggest thing for me, is that I feel like on paper there's a lot of people around the league, including David Aldridge, who I think is great, like one of the people I respect the very most among writers in the NBA. He just did an off-season rankings thing where he ranked like the team's off-season, and he had New Orleans 28th. But I think I'm not surprised, because I thought what would happen is kind of exactly what happened, where they lost two guys who are well-known, Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, and they brought in a lot of role players. But so on paper, I think you can say, like, okay, well, they're not as talented as they were last season. But I think I haven't heard anyone say this, but I'm thinking that part of the what you're looking for is that you want to be like last season's Portland team was, where your chemistry is a lot better. Guys know there's a lot more role definition. Like, okay, these are the two or three scorers. The other guys are hustle guys, defenders. And obviously you want to improve a ton on defense, because that's been a problem the last 3 or 4 years. So I think that's the main thing that I'm kind of looking at going into the season, is just chemistry and like how everything's going to fit together better, hopefully. And obviously the defensive end as well I don't think they really can improve much unless they make some big strides on the defensive end.
Well, I'll put you in some really good company with one of my favorite people to talk to, which is Bobby Marks from Yahoo, who's kind of their front office expert, who I've talked to for quite a few stories, and he's a former NBA front office guy. And early in the process, so this was, I think it was the week of the draft or the week after the draft, I had talked to him for a draft story, and then I kind of started to preview free agency. And Portland was the team he mentioned specifically in talking about what the Pelicans needed to go out to do, which was, you know, go. You're not going to go out and drop a bunch of money on one guy, you can't really do it. So what you have to do is you got to go find those pieces. And his thing was, you know, last year, and his exact point was, last year everybody kind of scoffed at what Portland did. And this is way before anything happened with signees. Mm-hmm. He said a lot of people scoffed at what Portland did, and they said, what are they doing with this guy? What is that move? What is this? Who are these guys? And then as it turned out, those guys fit what they were doing really well. They had a plan, and those guys fit well into that plan. And I think that's the objective here. It is get, you know, I don't really love the word system guy or whatever, but mm-hmm. but you're trying to establish an identity, and you want players who best fit that identity. You have two really good players. You got a bunch of really good players, but you have two guys who you think are, you know, I think sort of cornerstone pieces in Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday. So you want guys that fit with those guys. And I think that's what they tried to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it's a situation too where I do think that there was too much there. The one thing that's tough about judging the last couple of years or the core is that there were so few times when everyone was healthy that it's like I could see why they kept you kept saying like, okay, well, we haven't been healthy yet, but now we want these top five guys to all be healthy at the same time, and then we can judge it. But that so rarely happened. But at the same time, I think I'm not sure if it was the best mix anyways, because you don't want to have five guys that all are trying to score. You have to have a combination. And I think that's what Portland did so well, and that's why they exceeded expectations so much and put together a team that made the second round of the playoffs. You had CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, who were like, okay, these are the scorers, and the other guys are going to kind of fit in and fill in and do and focus on a lot of the other stuff. So I think that could be kind of the formula that is part of how the Pelicans can improve this season. I think the number one is just being healthier. Obviously, that's not exactly a breaking news, but I do think that,
like, my inclination when somebody says like the Pelicans have to be healthy, they need to be healthier. Like, my inclination is to say, well, they can't have another year like that. But like last year, I kept saying nothing could get worse, and it just stuff just kept happening. So I'm not going to say
that.
I could be wrong.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can never predict injuries, and unfortunately, I mean, you never know. I mean, it did feel like there's been some recent years where they had a lot of injuries, and we thought, okay, that's the worst injuries that they could possibly have in a season. And then last year happened, and it was like, wait a minute, this is unprecedented. Something that, even looking at all 30 teams in the NBA, I'm not sure if anyone had dealt with that. The not only the number of injuries, but just how many of them were to guys that you really, really needed and were big parts of what you were planning on trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was I've said this a million times, and I don't know if independently somebody came up with it too, and Alvin Gentry started citing it, but it was, I mean, I think 19 games with Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, you know, Tyreek Evans. If you talk about the guys who are back this year who were also core pieces last year, I think those guys played 19 games together last year, and they were 10-9 in those games. It's a small sample size. It's not that meaningful. But if you go 10-9 in every segment, I've said this before, you go 10-9 in every segment last year in the West, you're making the playoffs.
Sure. I mean, that's a good point. And I do think that, you know, obviously, you know, I want to be as objective as I possibly can, and I don't want to sound like a homer. But sometimes this offseason, when I've heard people say, like, especially nationally, like people maybe that don't necessarily follow the team day in and day out, when I see people say like, oh, this is not a good team at all and blah, 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 it's kind of like, well, you're kind of missing a big factor of last season of what happened if you think that it's just that this is just flat out not a good team. I mean, they won 30 games, but I don't think you would say like it was a 30-win team if you look at the talent that they had or just the ability to win games. I think with even reasonable health, you would think that they could have figured out a way to squeeze out like at least 8 or 10 more wins and been, if not, you know, a lot closer to 500.
Yeah, it's reasonable to say, by the way, because I think I'm reasonable and I say this constantly. It's reasonable to think that they could have made the playoffs with a healthy team last year and still think that maybe this is the best thing long term, that they're retooling it. Because I don't know that was necessarily set up for long-term success for some of the reasons you talked about, you know, in terms of what their offense and defensive balance and all that kind of stuff and what they were going to have to do contractually going forward and just the way the pieces fit with this specific system. There's any number of reasons why I'm not sure it was the best long-term roster. But I think had it been a healthy roster, sure, I think they sneak in the playoffs. I don't think that's outrageous to say at all. It's just it's a combination of what I think their talent level would have been if they were healthy and the softness of the West at the bottom, which as you have sort of enumerated this week on Twitter, was very rare. It was a rare, soft, lower half of the West.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sixth seed was 42 or 43 wins. I'm trying to remember exactly. That hasn't happened in the entire time that the Pelicans/Hornets have been in the West, which is going back to 2004. So yeah, it was the West has been historically last 10, 20 years has been so much deeper than the East, but it is starting to balance out a little bit. So you could have won like 43, 44 games last season, which wouldn't have been an amazing year, but it would have been decent and been like a 5 or 6 seed in the West. So yeah, it was making the playoffs. Was not as hard as it had been, based on the records of some of the teams that did get in the West.
Yeah, it was a weird year, and it's an easy year to sort of leave behind and think about the next year because it is such a hard year to evaluate. And I think, I've talked about this. I think I feel like I'm going to talk about this on every single podcast now since I talked about it with Tim Bontemps. But I do think they're one of the great mystery teams going into the year. I think, Tim said on here, anybody who says they know what they are, just don't believe them. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what this team is. And that sort of makes the preseason and the early part of the season, to me, real exciting because I think last year we were wrong about what we expected out of them, but we had a real clear sense of what they were, I think, what they were going to be if they were healthy at least. We ended up not being right because they weren't healthy. But this year I go in. I'm really excited from that standpoint because I like mystery. I like not having any sense of it. And like I'm sure it would be fun to cover the Warriors, who essentially what that's going to entail. But I like the idea that we're kind of going to go into a preseason here in a few weeks where we don't have a great feel for what we're going to see. We're going to learn a whole lot, I think, early on.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I think there's a lot of different factors that lend this being a mystery team, as you said. I think I remember listening to that when you were talking to Tim saying that, but I mean, some of it is the number of changes and that kind of thing. There's definitely not that many teams there's probably no team in the NBA that had as many injuries combined with changes to the roster this year. So I think if you add those two things together, there is a pretty wide range, I think, that people are predicting as far as what they could be, as far as, maybe I think ESPN summer forecast that everybody looks at, they were 11th, but I think there's other people that think that they could be, like a 7 or 8 seed. So, I mean, it's a pretty wide range of where they could fall in the West coming up this year.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. Any player you're particularly intrigued to see? Anybody you want to sort of watch early on?
I think Terrence Jones is the guy that I'm the most intrigued by, just because I've seen him, in person over the last couple of years, have some really good games against New Orleans, and of course on TV. And the year that they won 50 something games, and he was a starter. I think it was his second year in the NBA. I thought he was, a lock as a big part of the Rockets' future. One of those guys that was going to be there for a long time. So I know he didn't play well last year, and he had obviously the injuries a ton the last couple seasons. But I think he's the guy that I'm the most curious about watching because I think he's very talented, and it was really surprising that they were able to land him as easily as they did in free agency. So I want to see how he kind of fits with the Pelicans, and even I think he's probably somebody that they like as far as being able to get up and down the floor, and somebody who's athletic but is also versatile. So I mean, he could be somebody that fits really well with what Elvin Gentry and the team overall is trying to do.
Yeah, he's an intriguing guy just because he has been very good and very bad in his NBA career. He's had his rookie year was just kind of up and down. He was in the D League a lot. He just couldn't really find a place. And then last year, I talked to the guy who hosts Locked On Rockets. We had a long discussion about him, and he talked about the fact that it was a little hard to find a fit last year. You changed coaches while he was kind of unhealthy, and he just never really fit in, and he was not good. I mean, statistically, he had a very bad year last year, but 2 and 3 years ago, he was very good when he was on the floor, and I do think he's a guy who he fits the system pretty well. I think he's a good passer and a good IQ guy, and who knows? If he's the guy he was 2 years ago, he's a really interesting guy because he can change a lot about what you do. So, yeah, I think that's a really good answer. He's just he's definitely intriguing. When you talk about sort of mystery guys and X-factor guys, I think he's the guy that jumps out. He's also a mystery guy because he won't talk to us. He's the only guy we haven't talked to.
In this whole process. Right. he's keeping a low profile.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened. I know he was – they had something scheduled, and he was on the verge of meeting. But, I don't know. Maybe he's laying back, and he's going to surprise us all and be the most media-friendly guy when training camp starts.
He's not bad. I've covered him before. He's really not that bad a guy to cover. He can actually be sort of – I have kind of an interesting history with him. He may not remember because there were a million of us that covered him at Kentucky.
Yeah.
But I had a really long sit-down interview with him. I had an interview scheduled with him in advance. And he had like an infamous moment sort of in his freshman year at Kentucky, really a more infamous moment for Calipari, because Calipari got caught on TV calling him something unpleasant. And and I had this interview pre-scheduled, and shockingly, given the way that things operate at Kentucky, they let me do it. And we got to talk about it. And it was really interesting. He opened up about it and about, you know, how the sort of things we don't know about Calipari and their dynamic and how that stuff didn't bother him because he knew what was sort of behind it and all that stuff. But it was interesting stuff. And he can be really kind of an open guy. So, you know, I'm interested to talk to him. Hopefully we will get to do that someday. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think I've ever talked to him before. He's one of the guys I don't think I've ever met him before. So I am curious to get a chance to talk with him and see like what his perspective is, especially on coming here and the opportunity that he could have with this team.
Well, I am nothing if not good at seizing on a transition and talking and going over things and observations and people I enjoy talking to. I've enjoyed talking to you, but we should probably wrap this thing up because this has been very, very long.
You know, the podcast I do for the Black and Blue Report with Dan, here's a plug here, with Daniel Salerson, they end up going way longer than they're supposed to be. So I don't know if that gets annoying to them sometimes, but don't feel bad because it seems to be something that I guess I'm a little bit too verbose sometimes.
Well, I've been doing this kind of with all the ones that have guests in the offseason anyway, because I'm only doing one a week now. You know, this is a daily show in the regular season,
yeah.
As people know, will be again in the regular season. But during, you know, it's the offseason, people have a whole week where they can listen to this because there won't be another one for, you know, until the latter part of next week. So you got all this time. You can break it up. You can listen to it in chapters, I figure. People will be fine. They won't mind.
I like it because, as I'm sure you know, a lot of times when you go, when like a radio station or whoever asks you to come on, it'll be like a 3 to 5 minute thing and you feel like you could only talk about two or three different things. So I kind of like doing the longer format once in a while to kind of get a little bit more background and description in on different things.
I do hate that. What bums me out sometimes is when I prepare and I feel like I've really got some good stuff to say and I'm like in there for 2 minutes and then they move on to talking about the Saints or whatever. It could be any number of things that they move on to talk about. But like, yeah, it's like, oh yeah, there was like 10 more things I could have said about that, but oh well.
Right. That happens all the time.
This is the podcast is a great outlet. So you mentioned you by the way, I encourage plugs. So you mentioned the podcast. You know, people can find your work at Pelicans.com. Tell people how they can follow you on Twitter too.
It's just my name, Jim Eichenhofer. It's Eichenhofer. They might have to rewind that a couple times if they're gonna write that down, but yeah, that's how you can follow me on Twitter.
All right. Well, Jim, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. We will we'll see you a lot down the road here pretty soon. It's been the summer is short in the NBA. It's almost over.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I know we're going to have a million other conversations about the NBA, and I'm getting excited. This is definitely the time of the year right after the schedule where I'm ready for the season to get here. And so, but I appreciate you having me on. I'll be glad to come on anytime.
Sure thing. We'll do it again during the season, I promise. Thanks again.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, so I could have talked to Jim for a very long time. I did talk to him for a pretty long time, and hopefully that kept you entertained. You probably heard that echo effect a little bit more in that part of the podcast. I'm learning some things about where and where not to sit in this house when I podcast, so hopefully that will be a little bit better next week. Speaking of next week, I hope to have another guest. If there are guests you'd like to hear, if there are questions you'd like to have me address either by myself or with a guest, you can always email me at lockedonpelicans@gmail.com. That's also the email, of course, if you're interested in sponsoring this podcast. So get at me one way or the other. Appreciate any feedback that you have, and that's the place to send it to me. One way or another, whether I have a guest or not, I will be back here next week. I hope you will be too.
Napa Know How.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.